From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's December 18th, 2020. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
This World Series proves that people just are clamoring to play. It's remarkable how many people want to play this game for this amount of money.
Yeah, so I didn't know really what to make of this. So certainly the World Series put their best spin on it. It seemed to me, I mean, I guess if I would have put some wagers down,
yeah,
I probably would have guessed on a lot more entries than they got. But again, I mean, I don't think anybody really knows in this crazy weird world we're in right now, right?
Right.
So I don't know. So here's the deal. The two continent opening days of this year's unique hybrid World Series poker are over, and total entries were 1,379, 674 of them in Europe on GG Poker and 705 in the United States on WSOP.com. Those entries created a $13,238 million prize pool, not counting the $1 million to be added by GG Poker and WSOP.com. Damian Salas of Argentina won the European side of the tournament and will face the winner of the U.S. side December 30th at the Rio in Las Vegas. The U.S. champion will be decided December 28th. Joseph Hebert leads the final nine with more than 13 million in chips, nearly three times as much as Sean Stroke in second place.
I think it's Hebert or is it Hebert? What do you think?
Hebert, yeah.
Remember the Saints quarterback, Bobby Hebert? Yep. Yeah, yeah. Yep. And we're like, you're just fooling yourself, man. It's Hebert. It's Hebert.
It all depends. If you're born in Louisiana, I'm sure it's Hebert.
That's right.
Anywhere else is probably Hebert.
Well, speaking of this guy, it's going to be tough to blow that lead. I mean, I know you can, but it's going to be tough to blow that lead. Three times the amount of chips.
Right. I mean, it's almost like Jamie Gold kind of level, right? I mean, yeah. I didn't go back to look what his lead was, but I remember it being drastic. So, I mean, you're going to have some really bad beats to when you can knock out the entire field in probably one hand. Almost. I mean, pretty commanding spot to be in. So, but, you know, everything, weird things happen at final tables and online as well, too. So, speaking of online, last night we went out to dinner, and it was the first time I saw, like, the Club WPT televised on Fox.
Oh, yeah.
You seen this before?
I don't know.
So it's all them, they're playing online, so the main screen is the table that you're obviously you would see if you're at home playing, right? And then all the players are on, like, Zoom cameras.
Oh, wow.
So it kind of has the feel of live poker without being live poker. So I don't know if they've always done that or if that's just a COVID quarantine thing. I'm sure some of our listeners will let us know. But I thought it was a little interesting watching that. So, I mean, not enough to sit there and watch it after I ate my dinner. But So obviously it's going to be interesting. It's going to be good that we're going to have at least theoretically or supposedly we will have a live heads up championship match to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
Then watching people on computers and Twitch and stuff. So
I definitely have not seen that. I've been a part of a bunch of Zoom meetings, so I'm assuming my TV screen will look exactly the same.
Yeah.
For Zoom poker, but yeah, interesting. The world is such a strange place right now. Really is. We're literally watching television shows that are of people on TV screens. It's the weirdest thing. The other day I was watching one of the sporting events and I was like, whoa, how do they get that many people in there? That's got to be against restrictions. And I'm like, wow, that's a lot of cutouts. I mean, that was a lot of cutouts. I think it was like a Falcons football game, or I don't know who it was, a football game down here. I couldn't believe how many cutouts they had at that game. It's crazy. It's crazy. The world's crazy right now.
This world right now, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm just happy that there's some semblance of normality out there despite the criticism of the World Series. So we will see how it plays out and whether Damian will face Joseph Hebert or Herbert or somebody else at the end of this month.
All right. More news for us.
Stephen Lau of Lau & Associates, a Beverly Hills law firm, has filed a motion in California to drop Mike Postel as a client. Lau says Postel, who has been accused of cheating players in live stream poker games and is suing several people and entities in a $330 million defamation suit, is no longer communicating with the firm. A judge will rule on the request in January.
Wow. So this just never ends. It's the story that keeps on giving.
Still waiting for that Netflix documentary. So
I'm telling you, someone's going to have to make some sort of dramatic movie or something, and like Justin Timberlake will play Mike Postel or something. I don't know.
That's actually pretty good casting.
Thank you. But this movie, I mean,
to Mike, but yes,
it's got to be coming soon.
I can see that.
It's ridiculous.
So again, I am not a lawyer. I've only watched 17 seasons of Law and Order, whether probably 34, right?
All right.
It's just weird to me that a lawyer or a law firm has to file a motion to quit.
I know. Yeah,
and my cousin Vinny, the guy, he said, "I'll take him."
Yeah,
fire the guy right on the spot. So, but lawyers have to file a motion to be separated.
So, why do you think is because he? I mean, it's just we're just speculating here, obviously. And I know, like, politicians don't like to deal in. But I, by the way, I'm probably wearing my Scott Long for city commissioner shirt today.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
And the matching shorts. Now the shorts match because of the color, not because I have your name
yeah,
on my
I did not
on
have
my ass.
Campaign shorts made. I did have campaign mask made this year. I never thought I would have that happen before.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I don't have juicy shorts or what are those shorts that I'm the, you know, but I do have Scott Long shorts with your name on my ass, you know. So I wonder, like, we're just speculating, and but I wonder why this guy is, because he thinks Postel's just getting crazy with this. Why would he not want to be his lawyer?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously the guy's not, according to the lawyer, is not communicating with the firm. So, I mean, it's really hard to represent someone if they're not responding to emails or phone calls or anything else, right?
Yeah.
So I get that. So I guess the question is, if that is accurate, and I have no reason to believe it's not, why has the communication been cut off? So, yeah. Again, just if you want me to speculate, I would say when I hear Beverly Hills Law Firm, I'm thinking pretty expensive, right?
Yeah.
Now, sometimes in these, I mean, I don't think this, it doesn't sound like this is one of those ambulance chasers on TV that only gets paid when they collect, right?
Right.
So I don't know. Maybe there's a retainer involved here that has got too expensive, and rather than just say, "Hey, man, I can't pay for it," you just shut off your phone.
Shut your phone. Don't answer it. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, again, just speculating here, but it is an interesting development. And the person that broke this news was the attorney that sued him.
Oh, wow.
And represented the other clients. So, and he posted on his either Twitter or Facebook, and he said, quote, without comment. But that's kind of how people knew that was happening. So, yeah, it's such an interesting case, and we'll wait and see what the documentary says. But there's going to be a Hollywood movie.
yeah, something's got to be done. So this it seems to me this is clearly going to be over now, though. I mean, if you're all your crazy lawsuits aren't even being represented by anyone, then there's a reason why.
Yeah. So
all right,
we'll see.
Yeah.
All right, here's this week's update on casinos and poker room reopenings. In New Jersey, Harrah's Resort Atlantic City will reopen its poker room on December 26th. And not accounting for the recent temporary closings, we now have 210 reopened poker rooms in the United States. AntiUpMagazine.com/reopen. Let's verify details on casino and poker room reopenings. If you have updates, email us at editor@AntiUpMagazine.com. We are also emailing a weekly e-blast with updates that you can subscribe to on the homepage at AntiUpMagazine.com. I've only been saying that for four.
No, I know. Jeez. I was just thinking. Right? I was just thinking that myself. I'm like, you know, we need to change the script once in a while, and so today we did. We made it 210 instead of 209. So that made it a little different.
Well, really, I should just delete it and see if I can do it by memory.
I know. I totally can do like the call the floor by memory and stuff. Now it's crazy. I was just thinking that Harrah's. That's where we played on one of our many trips, and you were losing so badly that you went to blackjack,
yep,
and then won it all back.
Yep.
And then came back to the table, lost badly. He went back to blackjack and won it all back. And I'm like, well, why don't we just start a blackjack magazine?
Yeah, see, this is the reverse of what I tell people about why casinos should have poker, is because generally you win a lot of poker and then you go dump it back to the casino, the blackjack tables. I did the opposite. I dumped it all to players that walked out of the casino and took it from the casino at the tables. So
we should have, like, halfway through our magazine career, tenure, whatever you want to call it, we should have made one of those flip magazines where you turn it around upside down and the back half would be a blackjack magazine.
Yep.
And we'd have a blackjack cover, right? I think Bluff did that with boxing for about one issue. believe
yeah,
it or not.
That's right, they do.
Yeah, I think it was related to the person who was running
the
fight boxing
or something,
part.
Right? Or, no, there's Magazine of Fight, or something like that. They were
yeah.
running the fight arena.
Yeah, like fight.
Got out of all arenas. So.
But we should have done that with Blackjack, because then, you know, we might still be publishing a magazine right now.
That's a very good point.
Or half a magazine. Okay, we got any updates here. The Papes series, which is online on PokerStars, is available everywhere. Details on how you can join can be found at bit.ly/papes, P-A-I-P-S. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th every month. Rotate disciplines with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. And PokerStars lets you claim those 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the NEF fans group on Facebook. And post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask call to four questions, and just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Antiup logo designs on merchandise at antiupmagazine.com/shop to buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and more with your choice of the Antiup Magazine, Antiup Pokercast, or Antiup Pokertour logos. And if you have a hand of the week, listener spotlight, or call to four submission, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or post in the Antiup fans group on Facebook. There, I did all that by memory.
Nice. Did not mess up a single word like I would have.
Each week we do spotlight a listener who emails us, and if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like a call to foreign handle, you can send them something cool. This is Rick Barnes. I'm going to need some help with this one. Yep. He says, can you explain the difference between trading pieces, my horse, backer, and makeup? These are all terms that I hear, but I'm not familiar with at my level. I pretty much know them all. But when I first read it, I was scared.
These are terms you probably don't want to know.
Yes, that's a good
point.
Usually
end up poorly for everybody that's involved, unfortunately. So, of course, these are all terms for backers and players that take assistance from other people for buy-ins and then give them a share of the winnings, right?
Yeah.
So I can run through them real quick. Trading pieces would be like if Chris and I would both enter a tournament and we say, hey, if you win, I get 50% of yours, and if I win, you get 50% of mine, right?
Yeah.
Or some level percentage of that. So we are trading pieces in each other, so we double our chances of cashing, right?
Yes.
My horse would be if I said, Chris, I suck at poker. You're really good at poker. Here's $100. Go buy into that tournament, and I get X percent of whatever you win.
I have to say right here and now that sentence has never been uttered until today. And of course, the origin of it is that, you know, when you go bet on a horse, that's my horse out there, and so you're betting on me to play better for you,
right.
And so I'm your horse.
Yep, that's certainly where it comes from. So just like the Derby. Yep,
there you go.
And then backer would be the opposite. And in that scenario I just made, I am the backer and Chris is my horse.
Yes, I'm your horse.
You know, I'd probably get farther riding on you rather than you riding on me.
You probably would.
Probably more jockey material than you are, right?
You are definitely a jockey material. Well, until you put on that past blue ribbon gut. But before that, yes.
Yeah, I do have a little COVID weight that I need to work off at some point.
You were short enough to be. You know what? And the funny thing is that you're already used to wearing like obnoxious colors and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like
I do
jockey
have a jockey costume even. So.
There you go.
Yeah. Won me a prize at the Kentucky Derby party this year. So.
Cool.
And then makeup obviously is a little bit more confusing, but let's say you have a in those other scenarios that it's a one-time deal with me and Chris, right? So.
Yeah.
Well, let's say that the Chris wins that tournament and goes on a rush, and I'm like, man, I can make some money off of this guy. So Chris and I sit down with a little legal agreement, and I agree to buy you into 10 tournaments, and a percentage of your winnings come back to me. But if you do not cash in any of those 10 tournaments, Chris, you horrible player, you.
I know, I'm terrible.
Now you kind of you owe me that money, so that's what's called makeup. So the next time you cash, before we execute the terms of our agreement, the first X amount of that money goes to me to get us back to even, Steven.
Yeah.
So that's makeup, and this is why I encourage Rick not to really know this stuff, because we've been very clear on this show, right, that we are not big fans of horsing and backing and makeup and all this kind of stuff. I mean, obviously, it's a free country, so you all can get out there and do that if you want. Certainly, if you're an up-and-coming player, it's very nice to have that financial security of knowing that you don't have to use your bankroll to enter the tournament. But these things tend to go south pretty quickly when the winning stops.
I used to, like, if somebody wanted to put me in a tournament and I was just sitting around doing nothing and I didn't have the money myself, I didn't mind that, you know, because, I mean, when we used to go to Sarasota, I used to cash, like, 70% of the tournaments there for some reason. I don't know, because they were terrible players or the way the system was set up or structure, whatever it was. I did pretty well down there. But sometimes I'd go down there and people would want to put me in. And I was like, yeah, you know what? All right. And I would play and then I would cash and I'd give them their money back and then we split the other amount. And that was kind of cool. The problem with that is that, you know, if you just had the stones to put up your own money, you could keep all that money yourself. You know what I mean? And that's the... Then you start to resent it after a while, and that's the problem.
Yeah, know? I think there's resentment on both sides that's possible here, right?
Sure.
So if you start going on a winning streak, then you're like, why do I need this backer? I mean, all this money should be mine. I'm the one doing the work, right?
Yeah.
And then the flip side is if you go on a losing streak, now this backer's like, man, I invest a lot of money in you, and I'm not getting anything back. Generally, there's so much generally speaking here. It all depends on your agreements, but a backer can back out of these deals, and the makeup is lost. So, well, you know, the player would not have to pay that back if, you know, they get to the point where the backer feels like you're throwing good money after bad, right? So, it's tough. We talked about this. Poker's an individual game last week, right?
Yeah.
And so now when you have somebody involved in it with you, now you have to take into their considerations. And I think the weight of the game would weigh on me too much, right? Now I feel like I'm playing not just to win for me, but I feel some pressure to win for the person that put me in. And if that's one tournament, that's not that big a deal. But, I just can't imagine the stress of falling deep into a makeup hole and feeling like you have to get out of it. And, it did make me think of our good friend Lee Childs, right? I mean, this is a situation he found himself in, and this was pretty famous a couple years ago. We talked about it on the show, but there are some articles about it where he got down to a final table and they were offered him a deal, and the deal would have been enough to get him out of the makeup hole for his backer. But the backer gets to make that call.
Yeah, that's weird.
And the backer said, no, you're going to keep playing. And then he cashed for way less and was stuck in the makeup hole still, where, you know, in his mind, that was a good deal. Get me out of this makeup and then we can go our separate ways. But the backer in that situation, I don't want to say it was greedy, but certainly, felt like... he must have been playing well enough there that now we can get out, now to get out of makeup, but also make some money too, right? So that's why the backer gets to make those calls. So, I mean, if you really want to control your own poker career, you should not take a backer, right?
That's where ethics too, I think it's one of those, you know, things where it's kind of a fine line between ethical and unethical behavior, because while somebody is giving you money to play in a tournament, you ultimately are the player and should make decisions at the table. And it's weird that somebody outside of the game is now influencing how the game is going.
Right.
And yep. It's just not a good situation at all. When I was younger, I was a really good bowler. Like, now I'm still really good, but back then, I mean, I was considering going pro, and there were people that wanted to put me on tour. Like, they wanted me to go on tour and give up everything and just go, and they would pay for everything. But I didn't do it. But I remember back then, like, if we had a weekly tournament at the local bowling center or something, I would just be down there hanging out, and I didn't have any money on or whatever, but somebody would walk up to me and go, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm just chilling with my friends. And I'm like, dude, why aren't you in this tournament? And I'm like, I don't have the money. They're like, I'll put you in. And I would love that, because I'd be like, because I just loved bowling so much.
Yeah, you get to play, right?
I get to play. That's all I wanted to do. And I would tell them, you can have it all. Whatever I win, you can have it. I just want to enjoy this tournament. I love bowling. I loved it so much. And there was even a time where when I was playing poker, there were a couple of times where people wanted to put me in a sit and go or something. And I was like, yeah, if I win any money, you can get it. I just feel like playing against these people or just playing. But when it's your livelihood, then I can see where it's that stress you were mentioning earlier, where you don't want to lose this person's money, but you also have all this pressure for your own livelihood and your own way, you know, of getting out from under this hole or this rock that you're in because of this freaking makeup thing. And, oh, man, I just, you know, I couldn't do it. I mean, I could do it for fun. If somebody's like, hey, I got a ton of money and I want you to play this tournament, so I think you can win and you're pretty good or something like that, that's one thing. But if it's like, hey, okay, this is an agreement and this is how you're putting food on the table for your family, that would just, that'd be way too much stress. I couldn't concentrate playing. I would always be worried about it.
It'd be really, really difficult for me. So again, it's your frame of mind. And it's also the frame of mind of the backer too, right? If you have a backer that understands all this and is cool with it, then that's a different story, right?
Yeah,
if they know that, hey, you know, there's going to be good days and bad days, and they're not going to stress over the bad days because they know the good days are going to come. That would be a little bit more reassuring to me. But I think this is like any investor in anything, like a restaurant or any kind of business, right? They come in all flavors, right? And if you get one that, for whatever reason, thinks that because you've been cashing in 70% of tournaments in the past year that you'll continue to cash at 70% of tournaments in the current year, and it doesn't accept anything less than that, that's going to be pretty toxic, not only to the relationship, but to your love of the game, right?
Yeah, so, exactly.
So that's perfectly why, I mean, no one's clamoring to put me in tournaments, so don't get me wrong, I'm not inflating my own ego here, but if they were, that's why I think I would politely say no thank you.
Yeah. Hey, we get to complete O'Malley's move today. That's always exciting. So here comes part one, and we'll see you on the other side.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are playing $1, $2, No Limit Hold'em at our regular home game. The game is six-handed. The host has upped the max buy-in, which is now 300. Everybody bought in for the max, and we've been playing for about 2 hours. We sit with 350. The blinds post, the under-the-gun folds, the plus-one calls, the cutoff calls, and we're on the button with the ace of diamonds, 10 of spades. This is a decent hand six-handed, and I'd like to narrow the field significantly. We make it $10 to go. The standard raise is 3x, and we account for the limpers. The blinds fold, the plus-one calls, but the cutoff folds. There's $25 in the pot, and the flop is the 10 of diamonds, 8 of diamonds, 6 of diamonds. This is a great flop for our hand. We have top-top with the ace flush draw. The plus-one checks. The plus-one is a solid player, but knows how to adjust based on table dynamics. He likes to play speculative hands, but can release them if necessary. I'm a little concerned about the wet flop, but since we have the ace of diamonds, I'm willing to get it in here. We make it $15 to go, and the plus one calls immediately. Could this be King of Diamonds X? There's $55 in the pot, and the turn is the tray of clubs, a complete blank. The plus one checks, and we bet $30. He once again instantly calls, almost beating us into the pot. This feels like the King of Diamonds. The pot now stands at 115, and the river is the four of diamonds. Once again, our opponent checks. It's value time. We count out a bet of just over half pot, $60, and slide it into the middle. I hope you don't have what I think you have, our opponent says. I'm all in. So, we've put in 115 of our $350 stack. It's 155 to call to win 385. What's the move?
All right, I'm a little confused here. The only thing beating us is the 9-7 of diamonds, and yeah, the quick calls in the hole, I hope you don't have what I think you have, line should at least suggest that possibility, but I'm just not a good enough player to lay this hand down. I'm calling.
Yeah, you know, if it's the big one for one drop and I paid $1 million to get in, I can fold here. Any other time, I'm calling, so I'm calling. Here we go, part two.
Hello again. Did you snap off here? I did. Maybe this is a tricky situation, and maybe that's by design, but once I called, our opponent flipped over his cards and said, I believe I have a straight flush. Yep, 7 of diamonds, 5 of diamonds. Nice hand, sir. Maybe his speech should have tipped me off. Great discipline checking the river there. I could have checked right behind him. We can't help ourselves and flash the ace of diamonds. The table erupts, and our opponent rakes in a nice pot. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, I believe I've earned a bad beat slash cooler story from time to time. I hope to see you on the felt.
Well, again, the best players in the world might be able to lay this down, but if you're listening to this show, you're not one of the best players in the world. Sorry to break it to you. And you should not beat yourself up over this cooler. I would have made this move every single time.
Yeah, well said. Just move on, and well, if it was online, don't throw your mouse against the wall and shattering it and denting the sheetrock like I did, and that happened to me 10 years ago.
Oh, man.
This is Lee Childs, 2007 main event, 7th place finisher, and you are listening to Annie Up.
All right, it's time for the AdvancedPokerTraining.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to the podcast.
Did you say Pat or Todd? I thought you said Toddcast. I'm like, hey, that's a great name for a guy named Todd.
That's Pi at AntiUpMagazine.com. New podcast at AntiUpMagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past show, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. Our good friend Brandon Huff, look at that. Took a couple weeks off and I remembered
his name. Still remembered his name.
He's back this week, Chris, and let's see what kind of trouble he's getting in this time. All right, let's see. Full 9-person ring game. It looks like this is online. So, 50 cent, $1 no limit hold'em. Our hero has 160 big blinds. The villain in this hand has him covered at 186 big blinds. So, as he said, we're pretty deep stacked. Let's see. Two folds, and we get dealt the 5-5 in what he calls the nickel back seat. Five back from the button.
That's hilarious.
I've never heard that, but I'm going to try to remember that now.
Oh, man.
So he's in the nickel back seat with two nickels, Chris. What are you going to do?
Well, the first thing I want to say is that if I have $160 at a $1 table, I don't think I'm deep stacked. I'm only 60 over the smallest buy-in. So I don't feel like, or whatever the buy-in, so I don't feel like that's deep. You know what I mean? And then I guess the opponent you said had 186. So even that, I mean, that's not even double the max buy-in. So that's not really that deep. Not that it's going to change anything. I just want to make sure we understand terms and stuff. So if I have 5-5 and it folds to me, a lot of times it depends on the table. You know, I've learned very little about the table itself other than a new term called nickelback. So in my mind, if it's one of those tables where everyone is raising to get in because that's the way we're playing and it's an aggressive table, then you're going to raise a 5-5. If it's one of those passive tables, you may just call. If I'm on a run and that's why I'm up to 160 and I bought in for 50 or something and I have 3x to my buy-in, then it's like, I feel like I'm invincible and I'm splashing around and I have a reputation for showing down big hands, then I'd raise. So it really depends on the situation. That's why his hands of the week are always so different and so difficult to really put out what we think is the most effective line of play. But in this case, if I'm going to raise, then I'll just raise to whatever the raise normally is. Since it's online and I want to make it look bigger than it is, I'll make a 9 on the end like Scott. So it'll be these like huge stacks of chips that, you know, intimidate people. But I don't know, whatever the standard of the table would be for a raise, if I'm going to raise. So in this case, most of the time I just limp and hope to hit a set for cheap. But because of he's first into the pot, I like to raise first in the pot. So I'd probably make it $3 or $2.99.
Yes, very well said. The only thing I'll add is that I like to keep my pre-flop play consistent, regardless of my hands and position. So if I'm first in, I'm always going to raise. Otherwise, I'm not going to be in the hand. So if I'm going to play this, which it depends on the table whether I feel like 5-5 is strong enough holding five seats for the button or not. But if I'm in, I'm raising. And, of course, I'm raising the whatever the standard raise that I've been putting in all the time, therefore, to disguise my hand. So,
yeah. Okay.
All right. Our hero raises to $2.87, which is 3/4 of the pot. And he says that's a standard raise for the table.
Makes sense.
Cutoff calls the raise, and a small blind raises to $12.50. The big blind folds, and it's back to us.
Most of the time, I just let this go. If that person is really deep and I'm really deep and I have a chance to pop a set, but I mean, looking at almost 10% of your stack there to call a raise, you know, and I realize we'll be in position, but generally somebody doing that has a big pair. And so, I mean, I guess you want to pop your set here and then make them, you know, to the felt, but I don't know. Most of the time I'm just like, all right, fine, take it. Let's move on, you know, because most of the time I'm going to miss the flop. And I'm not going to get the 8-1 on my money to do it. So most of the time I'm folding here. It's hand of the week. Clearly we're calling or raising again. So We're going to be in position, so that kind of helps. You know, you could float him if you know, just an innocuous flop comes, and you know, he bets, you call, and then on the turn he checks and you bet. But I don't know. I mean, I guess I could see a call. You know, after that, if we'd still have what, like $140 left anyway, a little more than that, so it's not that big of a deal. It's not going to put that much of a dent in your stack. It's just if you keep doing stuff like this, you'll be how quickly your stack will drain.
Yeah,
you know.
Down, yep.
But if you want to set mine, by all means, go ahead. But generally, if we're playing live and I'm only up 260 and I bought in for 100, I don't want to waste another, you know, $13 on hoping to flop a 1-in-8 situation. So, all that being said, I'll probably call. I'm in position. I seem to be running pretty decent, and I could double through this guy. So, I'm probably going to call and just see what happens and then be a little tighter later on.
Yeah, I'm not excited about making this call, but a couple of reasons that I probably will. One, again, we're within that 10% rule. So, you know, the flip side of saying that if we keep doing this, you winnow your stack down. If you don't make these plays when you have a decent stack, that's when you can make these plays, right? So, as long as you're restrained in it. So it's within our 10%, and it's a small blind raise, so we have to give the small blind credit for a fairly strong hand here, right? So what that suggests to me is if we do flop our set, that we will be able to stack this person probably. So that helps a little bit. So that's why I would call here. So
yeah.
Certainly no shame in folding, though. All right, let's see. And then the cutoff folds behind us, so we're heads up to the flop. He said, our hero says, I called us, the stacks are pretty deep. I have a good hand to set mine with, and I thought the chance of a 4-bet from the cutoff was very low.
Yeah, absolutely, because he would have raised you, so yeah, absolutely.
All right, $27.43 in the pot, and the flop is the 6 of clubs, 5 of spades, deuce of diamonds, and the small blind leads out for $18.10.
Okay, well, that's a great flop, obviously, because there's no way this person has 3-4. He may have 6-6, but I doubt he would have done that. He would have done the same thing and only called $3, right? So we probably have the best hand. Now we're hoping he has an over pair. If he does have an over pair, I'm going to pop it here. In my mind, I don't see any reason not to. He's supposed to have a big hand because he raised us after we raised in position to him, so, or her. So I don't have a problem betting again. Now, you could just call, but if you just call, know that you're giving them a turn for their price that could give them a set, so that's better than yours. So I don't mind betting again here. I don't mind raising this person because I think that they're supposed to have a hand. And you know, anybody online who has an overpair to 6-5 deuce is not folding to your re-raise here. So if you bet out 18 some, so I mean, I would 3x that and see what happens. That's what I would do. Now you could
exactly
just,
what I like.
Okay,
yeah, so here's the thing. I'm like, you're thinking like, hey, you want to be coy with your flop set, but generally, I mean, the guy's not going to really put you on a flop set here right now. I mean, if you continue being strong on the turn, then be time to figure that out, right? But right now, I would think that our opponent, again, has a strong hand. Probably the weakest would be an ace-king, but more likely a high pocket pair, right? They're going to see your raise here as pushing back on them to see whether they really have something, right?
Exactly.
So, very good chance here when you raise here that you're going to get re-raised, which is fantastic because, again, the chance of a tray 4 or pocket 6s out there is just so minimal. I'm not worried about it, right? So
yeah.
So there's a lot of reasons to raise here, not be coy and just call. So all right, our hero says, I just call. I would do so most of the time, especially if the flop is all small cards. If there was a couple of broadways, I might raise, but that's not the case here. All right, we'll see what happens, but all right, the turn is $62.07 in the pot, and the turn is the Queen of Diamonds. So our board now is 6 of clubs, 5 of spades, deuce of diamonds, Queen of Diamonds. Our opponent bets again, this time for $34.53, about half the pot.
Well, see, this is what we were getting at. I mean, and I'm not saying this is it, because it's very a fine point, but this is the type of thing that now makes you worried, because if he was playing with pocket queens and you didn't get your money in good, now you've got to worry if he has those queens and he's hoping that you have a pair that's over the sixes and maybe even kings or aces because of the way you played it preflop.
Yep.
And so now he's got the three queens and now he's going to bet into you and hope you shove. And so I don't know. I mean, I can't play. We've talked about monsters under the bed a lot on the show. Yeah, and so I don't think I could play that way. I think now is when I would raise again, because I don't want this person to have ace, king of diamonds and get there for his price. And then my set shrivels up into nothing. So I'm going to raise again here, like I would have last street. So,
or same with aces or kings or jacks or anything else. I mean, giving him another card to
hit another set,
catch up to, is just kind of dangerous. So you didn't raise last time like we did. So now you have to, but as you mentioned, it's more dangerous to raise now, right? So
but
we have to. So, all right, that's where Hero says, the time to raise. I raised to $101.59, and the small blind re-raises all in, which, of course, puts us all in.
Yeah, well, I mean, we can't fold that. I mean, we have a set, that huge pot, and it's not that much to call now, so now you have to call, even if you're behind.
$28 left anyhow.
So yes,
Okay, so the pot's over $250. So Hero says, I can't fold for this little more. I need to win only 10% of the time, and I think I do win more often than that. Small blind may have ace, 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 queen, king, king, or queen, queen. 6-6 is a small possibility, as is deuce, deuce, but it's pretty remote. He would have 3-bet with those hands pre-flop. The bigger hands are more likely. So I call it a combo of 6-6, 1 of 2 deuce, deuce, 3 of queen, queen, which I lose to, 12 of ace, queen, 6 of ace, ace, and 6 of king, king. Total combos are 29, and I lose to only 4 of them. So a call is mandatory. I call all in, and the cards are turned over. Small blind shows the queen of clubs, queen of hearts for the higher set.
Ugh.
The river is the five of diamonds. Yes, Virginia, sometimes there is a Santa Claus. Elizabeth saves the day.
Oh, man.
Yes. Yeah, it's like in the movie theater, like, don't go in there, right? We've been shouting at the entire hand, and that's, we literally called this hand all the way down to, other than the Miracle River, we didn't call that, but.
Yeah, no, we didn't see the quads coming, but, well, it's interesting that he lays out all those scenarios. When our people send in our hands of the week, I often wonder, are they actually thinking of all those scenarios at the table, with, especially online when you got 15 seconds to act, or are they just trying to, you know, save face later on and show all the stats that they, you know, it makes their call correct. And but I don't think he made a mistake here, other than probably should have gotten in earlier. But other than that, I mean, it's the one hand. It's the one hand, and it was there, and it hit us, and we got lucky. We got lucky at the end. But happens all the time online. Online's rigged.
Yep, it is. Well, good pot, Brendan, and interesting hand up until that point. I don't think anything would have changed had we played any differently. Queens aren't going anywhere in this hand, I don't think. So,
right,
you know, it all happened in a different sequence than it would have had we done it that way, but it all would have happened. So,
I totally agree. All right, I'm Chris Cosenza,
and I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.